Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day vacation fix for Wednesday, December 31st, 2014. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort, and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals, and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. So on this New Year's Eve edition of the podcast, I'm talking with Darcy MacKillop, who actually is going to talk to us about a non-Disney trip. It's been a while since we've talked about a non-Disney trip, but he's going to share with us about his couples cruise on the Norwegian Dawn to Bermuda out of Boston. Welcome back to the show, Darcy.
Thank you, Aaron. Good to be back.
So I think last time you were on the show, we may have been talking about a cruise that you took on the Disney Dream, and this is a little different cruise. You were, first of all, traveling with just other adults, yeah?
Yeah, it was the first time in a long time that we've my wife and I have taken a vacation without our son. So this was, a long time coming, well-needed vacation without the rest of the family.
Okay. And you had some other folks who were kind of traveling with you?
Yeah, we had two other couples that were traveling with us. The three wives of the group were all teachers, although one of them is now retired. But this was a trip that they were looking forward to because it happened about, well, not a week after the end of the school year. So they were really looking forward to taking this trip.
All right. And this is a cruise on the Norwegian Dawn. So tell us a little bit about this cruise ship. You know, most of us, our frame of reference is the Disney ships. So, you know, size-wise maybe, where does it fit in comparison to, Magic Wonder or Dream Fantasy kind of thing?
It's quite a bit smaller than the Dream. The Dream, I believe, has roughly 4,000 passengers, and the Norwegian Dawn is about 2,000. So it's about half the size in terms of passengers go. And actually quite a bit in physical size as well. And you can tell that it's a lot smaller just by, you know, how you're getting around the ship.
Okay. So it sounds like it's closer in size to the, you know, the Magic and Wonder class on Disney Cruise Line.
I think so, yes. Yeah. It's similar in size to we've done two other, besides the Disney Dream, we've done two cruises with Carnival, and they're close to the same size as the two Carnival ships that we're on.
Okay. And you sailed out of Boston on this one. So compare the experience of, you know, sailing out of Boston to sailing out of Port Canaveral.
It was certainly a lot easier for us. It saved us a flight, for one thing. We were able to, our typical start to the trip would be to drive from our home in New Brunswick across the border into Maine and fly out of Portland, Maine. This time we again drove to Portland, but then we were able to take a train into Boston, which is about two to two and a half hour train ride, which is a lot cheaper than a flight for sure.
Sure.
And it was my wife's first time actually on a train, she found it quite neat to travel with the Amtrak train from Portland into Boston.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, and I think a lot of, especially in Boston, I think it's a lot less hassle, you know, to deal with getting to the port from the train station than it is to deal with Logan Airport.
Yeah, I think so. We actually were into Boston a couple of days early and stayed there for the cruise left on July 4th. We arrived in Boston on July 2nd. But the hotel that we booked purposely was near, I believe it's North Station in Boston, where the train from Maine comes into. And I think we could actually walk to the hotel from the train station.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
So, you know, we had to lug some bags a little bit, but it wasn't too bad.
Okay, so you do realize, you know, I know y'all are Canadian, but you realize that you were showing up in Boston Fourth of July weekend, right?
Yes, we knew that. Yeah. But they, like I say, the crews left on July 4th, so we were headed out before, I guess, the big night. But it actually, because of some issues with weather, the July 4th fireworks in Boston ended up happening on July 3rd. But we still didn't take them in because of, luckily, the weather was really bad. Hurricane Arthur was making its way up the coast.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And actually coming past Boston the day we left on the cruise. So it was a bit of a, we weren't sure if we're going to get out or not, actually, that day.
Interesting. Okay. Well, you know, I want to jump in there in just a minute, but I do want to kind of rewind for a second and talk about a little bit, you know, the planning stages, because we always do that when we talk about Disney stuff. And I think sometimes we give short shrift to the non-Disney trips because we don't maybe have as much experience with the advanced planning piece of that. So talk to us a little bit about sort of the background here, how it was that you settled on this particular cruise and what kind of advanced planning went into putting this trip together.
The cruise, we actually booked the cruise probably, let me say, we took the cruise in July. We probably booked it in the fall, in October of last year. And a lot of it, we had looked at the cruise or cruises into Boston that time of the year a couple times before, based on some recommendations actually from other teachers that my wife works with, because it was, there's always cruises leaving out of Boston about that same time. And it's easy, like say, easy for us to get to. And sometimes the teachers just want to get out of town as quickly as they can. So we, like I say, we booked it back in, I think in October. Didn't do a whole lot of major planning probably until over the Christmas holidays when we started looking at what the itinerary was going to be for the ship and looking into what we might want to do while we're in Bermuda, because we had essentially 3 days in Bermuda to kind of look around, so which was another one of the selling points for this cruise being a different type of cruise where we were basically docked for 3 days at the destination. So we wanted to see what was available to do in Bermuda. You know, kind of figured how we were going to get around, look to see if there were any excursions we wanted to do.
That's actually very unusual to have a cruise that it basically was a point-to-point cruise, and then you just kind of hung out there.
Yeah, you don't see it very or hear of them very often. I know that this Norwegian does this one, and I think Royal Caribbean, I think, was doing the same sort of thing, because there was a, I think Royal Caribbean's Grandeur of the Seas, I think, was there from about the same time we were.
Okay.
And the same idea, just docked at the Royal Dockyards for about 2 days or 3 days and then left. And it seemed to be, for Norwegian, that's their summer in Bermuda. They there's one ship that comes out of Boston and one comes out of New York, and they just kind of, the one leaves in the morning, the other one arrives that night. So they're always there for those 3 days.
All right. So is there, which port in Bermuda do they dock at?
Going to the Royal Navy Dockyard, which is kind of, I guess, across a bay from Hamilton. Hamilton is the original dockyard, I think, for Bermuda, but the ships now are too big to get in there. So you still see some of the smaller, I think, high-end cruises go right into Hamilton. But the kind of the bigger mass-market cruise lines are stopping at the dockyard.
Were there any excursions that you were really excited about? There were ones that you know, you immediately said, this is stuff we've got to do.
You know, there really wasn't. And the more research that we did, we found that was more typical for Bermuda, that there's not a lot of, I mean, there were a lot of excursions that you could do through the cruise line, similar to going to other places. But there wasn't just anything that jumped out. And it kind of became more of a cruise for us where we're going to spend our time kind of in a more laid-back environment. We'll tour around the island on our own to see what was out there. We did end up booking one excursion. One of the other couples decided that they found one that they liked that we all ended up doing, and that was a glass bottom shipwreck and snorkel.
Okay.
Excursion. But that was the only excursion we actually ended up booking prior to getting there. So it, like I said, it became, we knew we wanted to hit a beach one day. We were doing this one day, and we were, you know, kind of just looking around. We wanted to see as much of Bermuda as we could. We didn't end up getting to the St. George portion of Bermuda, which would have been the most northerly end, and one of the older parts of the island. But we did get to see, say, around the dockyard area and around Hamilton. So, you know, and then the beach, one of the beach areas. So it was
When you're taking a really laid-back approach like that, I guess it takes a lot of the pressure off of doing the more detailed advanced planning because, you know, you're prepared going in to take a more leisurely approach.
Yes, yeah. And like I say, we did a little research into it, and it seemed that that's almost the big approach for Bermuda. It's a much more laid-back island, and people say there weren't a lot of excursions. There were the typical excursions you could get on, like there were the glass-bottom boat excursions, the party boat excursions that would, you know, take you out for the afternoon and ply you with alcohol and bring you back. but there were some tours around the island themselves, but it wasn't the same as, like, you know, we've done tours in, we've been in St. Martin's and St. Kitts, and there was a lot more excursions that you available in some of those islands than there were in Bermuda. So it was a little bit different that way.
Yeah, it sounds like it. All right, so let's get back to July 3rd, and you're getting ready to board this ship with a hurricane blowing up the coast. First of all, had you purchased travel insurance? Were you nervous about the prospects? If you hadn't, what was going on?
I believe we did have travel insurance on the cruise, I think. I'm not 100% certain now, but it wasn't a big worry, actually.
Okay.
It was funny because we went in, say we arrived on July 2nd, and through the assistance of Jim Locke, we had tickets to a Red Sox game that night. Great seats, and we have to certainly thank Jim for those because we ended up being like five rows behind the plate.
Wow.
Not soon after the game started, we started getting texts from people at home going, "Are you in Boston?" And like, "Yeah, we are." "Well, you're on TV right now." So we spent the evening on TV at a Red Sox game, which was nice. And then on the 3rd, like, we knew the weather was coming, but it was a beautiful day on the 3rd in Boston and very warm. So we had a chance to look around some of the historic parts of Boston around Faneuil Hall and some of the older parts of Boston and, you know, do a little sightseeing there. And we kept an eye on the weather, kept an eye on the Norwegian website, and they kept ensuring people that they were leaving, and it wasn't going to be delayed any great amount. So when when the 4th came and we headed for the port around noontime, it was actually still beautiful out. We get on the ship and it quickly clouded over, but it had started raining by the time we had left later that evening, but nothing that you thought you were in a hurricane by any means or any stretch of the imagination. It was just raining. But the one, I guess, interesting piece that we have, when we were able to get to our cabins, probably about 1 or 1:30 in the afternoon, the cabin my wife and I had was on the water side of the dock. And it's just a small channel that you're docked in. And on the far side, there was a news van parked there all afternoon with his camera. And we jokingly said that I guess they're taping the dawn leaving what could be its last voyage as it heads into a hurricane. But never saw anything on the news after that. But they were there all afternoon, so I'm sure it had to do something with the hurricane. But
Right. Waiting to see.
Yeah.
All right. So luckily, despite the weather concerns, you were able to get boarded fine. You got off all right. So let's start to talk maybe about some of the features of the Norwegian Dawn that you particularly enjoyed. I do want to maybe start us with dining, only because it's a really different system on Norwegian than on Disney Cruise Line. I mean, we've talked many times on the podcast before about Disney's rotational dining system. Norwegian is famous for its own approach, which they call freestyle dining. So talk to us about freestyle dining. How did that work, and what did you think of the concept?
To be perfectly blunt, we didn't like it at all.
Okay.
It was the one thing we were actually worried about was the freestyle dining. And like I say, we've done the other three cruises and we had selected a dining time. With Disney, you get to rotate amongst the three main dining rooms. With Carnival, there was only the one dining room. And you always had the same staff, the same wait staff on both of those other cruise lines. And with Norwegian, whoever was at the table that you were seated at that night. But with the one thing we did find out probably about 2 weeks before we left is they still have freestyle dining, but they've also started taking reservations for their main dining rooms,
okay.
Which was something that I don't think that they had had really told a whole lot of people, because there was a lot of complaining on board when people who had found out and made reservations showed up, and really all the reservation did was get you to the front of the line while everybody else waited in line with their little pager, similar to what you would get at Walt Disney World while you're waiting to be seated at a restaurant.
Right.
And part of the other issue was there was no place for people to wait. It wasn't the two main dining rooms. It wasn't like you were the dining rooms were next to a bar. They were, you know, at the bottom of a stairwell.
So there was no lounge to hang out in while you were waiting for your table, and no real, you know, space designed for that purpose.
No, none at all. And it, like I say, it created some huge lines. Any nights that we went to a main dining room, we actually had reservations made. So we were able to kind of jump that queue. Say there were some nights, especially the nights that we went or that we had to go at the, like, as soon as the dining period opened, and people that didn't have reservations saw these people kind of jumping ahead of them that had been waiting there. There were some very angry people.
Yeah, sort of like the early days of FastPass, when people didn't know it existed yet and were not thrilled by the people, you know, sliding ahead of the line.
True, yeah, exactly.
So the system was not particularly convenient for you, despite the fact that that's one of the big selling points for it, is that it's supposed to be much more convenient. What did you think about the dining experiences themselves?
We found that at best, the food was okay. When we compared it to Carnival and Disney, it certainly didn't rank up there in the same quality. In fact, for the cruises that we've done, we've always said that the main dining room food has been best in the Carnival ships. The buffet food was definitely head and shoulders above everybody else on the Disney Dream. But here, the food was, I'm not going to say it was bad, but I'm not going to say it was great either. And we found that the choices that you had were not all that vast. In fact, there were a couple nights in the main dining room where I said, you know, there's just nothing on this menu that's really appealing to me, is jumping out at me, is something that I want to have.
Right.
So it was a bit of a disappointment that way. And then with the wait staff itself became a bit, like, some of them were. It didn't appear that they wanted to be there. They were very, very surly at times, and not what we had come to expect from the wait staff on a cruise.
Yeah, you know, it sounds to me like that's one of those things that may just be a sort of a, you know, consequence of the fact that you don't have the same servers throughout your experience on the cruise, because they don't develop that relationship or rapport with you. And so, you know, I guess there's less incentive on their part to develop a relationship.
It's quite possible that could be why. We found the same thing. We did have they have many other restaurants on board the Dawn, but they're all their upcharge restaurants.
Right, right.
And we had made a reservation for one, I think it was the first night at sea, at the Teppanyaki restaurant. And the two chefs that worked there were fantastic and very entertaining. They prepared a very nice meal, but the waitress that was working with them, I don't think we saw her smile once. It was very strange. So, usually on a cruise ship, you find your wait staff is at least friendly, and as they get to know you, it becomes a little better. But in this case, that's not what we saw at all.
That is unusual. I mean, it just seems very strange to me. So you just tried the one upcharge restaurant. How many other restaurant choices were there on the Dawn?
I think there's four or five other restaurant choices.
Okay.
On the
Dawn. Those are all additional charge.
Yeah, anywhere from, I think the minimum was maybe $15 a person, and I don't think it went higher than, say, $30 or $40 a person upcharge. We did find that there was a huge push to get people into those restaurants all through the cruise. There's numerous announcements throughout the day, or on your TV, announcements that came across the TV in your stateroom, pushing people into these restaurants or trying to push people into these restaurants.
Okay, so that's the primary dining piece. What about the other, you know, food options, the quick service type things, and you know, drinks and all of that? I mean, I know that one of the things that we get spoiled with Disney Cruise Line is that you know, all the soft drinks are included, and there's you know, the fast food windows that are there in the pool deck are free and easily accessible. What was your experience with that kind of thing on the Dawn?
The buffet, or the Lido Deck buffet, the main buffet that people think about on a cruise ship, we found was not very good. Again, not a bad food, but just, we say every station seemed to be the same food, and it was the same thing every day. It as far as the core goes, it certainly seemed very cafeteria, like a cafeteria.
Okay.
So it didn't lend itself, I guess, to a place that you really wanted to go to eat, even if it was, you know, for your breakfast or for your lunch. There was another smaller, I guess it wasn't a buffet, it was actually a table service for most of the day. And late in the evening, it was a buffet. It was the Blue Lagoon, and it was just a smaller restaurant that was midships, I think, overlooking the main atrium. The food there was good, and it was a limited menu, but that was open 24 hours a day. But if you wanted to have a decent burger or chicken wings or salad or something, that's probably where we ended up more than the buffet. I don't think we actually went to the buffet more than once or twice, actually.
Well, at least, I mean, it sounds like they at least had some decent, you know, alternative options. It just wasn't what you kind of expected from, you know, cruise food, so to speak.
Exactly. And I think part of that was we got spoiled on the Dream. The Dream's buffet was, you know, amazing. The day that you get on, there's crab legs and shrimp, and you know that, and then that's there numerous times, and there was lots of choices. So I think, you know, there's a bit of obviously comparing one to the other, and because of that, this ship certainly lacked in that. But
all right. And what was your experience with things like, you know, soft drinks and you know, beer and wine, those kinds of things?
I guess, well, soft drinks weren't included like they are, I guess, with Disney. It was like some of the other lines where if you wanted them, you either paid for them as you got them or you bought the, you know, the week-long pass. But the, you know, the bar service was good. I think they lacked enough bar space or pub space on the ship, and I think part of that is because they've taken so much space away for their restaurants. But they're really, as far as, I guess, evening space to go to, they had one pub which was very small, and every night seemed to have karaoke in it. They had a lounge that was actually attached to the pub where they did some of their kind of more adult themed entertainment. But again, it was very small, and if you weren't in it at the very beginning, you had a hard time getting back into it. And the other end of the ship obviously was their main theater, but that was only open for the shows. And there were a few other bars around the ship, but none of them were very large. None of them had any real seating capacity.
Right. Interesting. Okay. And maybe let's move on to some of the entertainment options that were on board. You were traveling with adults, so you know, the overall approach to entertainment was probably a little different than the last time you were on a Disney cruise. What kind of entertainment was there on the ship, and what, you know, things did you check out and enjoy?
They had, for their main theater entertainment, they had the typical stage show that a lot of the cruise ships do. I believe the one on the Dawn was a show called Band on the Run, which was a 70s rock show. And it was entertaining. I mean, there were some of the cast members that were in the show were a little bit too over the top, but the main people that were that were singing were very good. Dancing was good, so it was entertaining. But it's not something that you would necessarily say, "Okay, I need to see that again." They did have Second City comedy troupe on board. They did one show in the main theater, and then they did another show in the lounge, which was more of an adult theme show. The show in the theater was definitely a family more family friendly show.
Right.
And then they also had a comedian on board that did a show in there one night. And I believe there may have been a magician, but I don't think we took in the magician or illusionist. So we did the three of the shows in the main theater, I guess.
Right.
And we found them, you know, they were, like I said, they were all entertaining. We were, as far as comedians go, I don't believe when we were on the Disney, they didn't have a comedian, but the carnival had at least one or two comedians on the two cruises we were on, and they usually did a couple shows a night. Where here, they only did one. So it was a bit of a disappointment that way, but, you know, they were entertaining. And then if they didn't have another show, they were a lot of times involved in something else. The Second City people and the comedian, for the life of me, I can't think of the name of the gentleman that was the comedian. They were involved in some of the other, I guess, the shows that the or entertainment that the cruise director himself would put on.
Okay.
You know, sort of like the Newlywed Show, or, you know, that type of thing. I think they did a Dancing with the Stars type of show, and the comedians were involved with that as well. So I mean, they did other things to help entertain, and which was good. But again, the biggest disappointment with a lot of it, of that type of entertainment, was that it happened in the Spinnaker's Lounge, which really had no space. So if you weren't there, you know, by 9 p.m., you weren't probably not getting in, or you were standing three deep at the back.
Huh. So there was some pretty good entertainment, but the availability to view it was limited enough to make it, you know, difficult to enjoy.
True, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, any other on-board kind of things? Or, you know, I don't know if you guys are casino people. I don't know what the casino situation is on the Dawn, or any of the other kinds of on-board activities that you checked out.
They do have a small casino on board. I think my wife and I only really were in it one evening. I think probably the last night we were there, it was kind of funny because I'm not a huge casino person. When I do go into a casino, typically it doesn't last very long because I'll play a slot machine and lose my money, and I'll say, okay, it's time to go. My wife, excuse me, usually has a little bit more luck playing a slot machine than I do. But for some reason, this night she seemed to. We think we each went in with our $20 to put in a slot machine, and hers was gone within a matter of minutes. And for some reason, mine kept going. But all of a sudden, it was like, okay, it's time to go. It's like, well, this is the first time we've been at a casino, and I'm winning, and you want to leave. But part of it, again, too, we knew we had to leave because we said if we wanted to get in to see the show, well, we had to go see the show. But so there was a casino there, typical of most cruise casinos, I think. You know, you've got your blackjack tables and your baccarat tables and your slot machines and stuff like that. But it was no different that way. And they had their typical, you know, around the pool, they had, actually it was a cast, some of their crew members had a band, I think, that performed around the pool every day. They weren't too bad. They had your typical, they had a couple of golfing cages set up, and, you know, the monster size, oversized chessboards and shuffleboard and all those typical type of things you would find on there, but nothing really out of the ordinary. There were nothing like you're finding on some of the newer cruise ships that are coming out.
Sure. Okay. All right. I think we've probably covered most of the ship. Actually, one thing that we haven't talked about much is the stateroom itself. So why don't you take just a little bit and talk about your stateroom, maybe compare it to your experience in some other staterooms, things you liked about it, things that you didn't like as much about it.
Stateroom was good, the cabin steward we had, it was probably the best we've had on all the ships. And the interesting thing with our cabin steward is when we were on the ship, it was right during near the end of the FIFA World Cup. And our cabin steward was from Costa Rica, I believe. And Costa Rica made it as far as the semifinals or quarterfinals. So he was quite excited through the whole thing. So, and he was an interesting man to talk to. So he was good. The cabin itself was good. It was probably a little smaller than the other ones we've been on, but not a whole lot. We were on deck 10, so we were high enough up that it was a comfortable spot. We had a balcony, not a huge balcony, and when we compare it to the one, I don't remember if you remember when we talked about our veranda that we had on the Disney Dream, which was the aft veranda. It was right. The size of a small dance floor.
yeah, you had one of those oversized aft verandas.
So it certainly didn't compare there this way, but it was nice because it was a quiet spot for us to sit. And you know, there's enough room for both of us to sit out there and read or whatever we wanted to do. And we didn't find that the around the pool area was, didn't find a lot of chair hogs, but every chair was full, usually, if we wanted to go near the pool. So this gave us a nice option for just staying around the cabin and sitting on the balcony. And the washroom was a little bit different setup as well. Not as good, again, as the Disney Dream setup, where we actually had two different rooms. One was the shower area, and one was the toilet area. Here it was sort of one room divided into three, where you had the wash basin in the middle, shower stall on one side, and the toilet side on the other, that could be divided into three separate rooms. So a little better than, say, the Carnival, but not as good as it would that the Disney ships seem to have.
Okay.
Like I said, the cabin itself was what we expected, I guess, and certainly comfortable.
All right. So glad that part was something that was up to standard. And then we kind of probably talked about most of the things about the ship itself. So let's go ahead and get to Bermuda and sort of talk about, you know, what stood out about your lazy, relaxed, Bermuda destination?
We were actually a little bit late getting to Bermuda because of Hurricane Arthur. We left Boston on July 4th, but we didn't really go anywhere. I think we kind of circled between Boston and Cape Cod for the night. Because then in the morning when you check on your TV to see, where are you in the ocean,
right.
We'd only traveled about 90 miles. And apparently we found out later what they were doing was communicating with some of their ships that were coming up the coast and just trying to figure out where the storm was and just kind of riding it out until it went by. So that put us behind a little bit getting in. We were supposed to get into, the dockyards around 11 a.m. typically on that Sunday, and we get in about 7 p.m. So it kind of, but then in the end, they said, well, we'll just stay longer. But staying longer meant you were staying through the night. So unless you were actually out at a bar somewhere, it didn't make a whole lot of difference. And
right.
There's no cab service to get you back if you were out. So really all it meant was we spent an extra night tied up alongside the dock instead of sleeping in the belly ocean. But when we got in, that evening, we got off the ship and took a little tour around the dockyard area. Because it was a Sunday and because it was already, let's say, 8 p.m., everything's pretty much closed up at that time. But it was a neat place to walk around. Like I say, it's the old Royal Navy dockyard. So you've got one of their old forts that are right there that they've done a lot of work on restoring and are still restoring. So it's kind of neat to see. And the other interesting thing that right kind of as you exit the dockyard, there's a jail or a penitentiary.
Okay.
As we kind of walked up by there, there were two or three people screaming names through the fence, so I guess trying to get somebody to answer them. But it was actually quite a ways away. It was kind of on the back side of the fort area that would have been there, so it wasn't like you were walking right by the jail, but you certainly knew it was there. So we didn't get a chance to do a whole lot there the first evening other than kind of take a quick peek around. The second day, which was the Monday, my wife and I got off and did actually a tour of the fort area and through the harbor master's house that was there and some different things there. And then the afternoon was when we were doing the one excursion, the glass bottom boat and snorkel tour. And that's actually when we found out that the hurricane had actually hit here where we are quite hard. It was we had been out of contact, and one of the people with us had turned his cell phone back on and started getting messages from people saying, you know, we have no power, and power is going to be out for a week, and trees are down everywhere.
So this is that hurricane that you missed in Boston, basically.
Missed in Boston, but
it worked its way all the way up, you know, to Canada, where you guys were coming down from.
Yeah, it hit here where, like, the city that we live in, it's one of the areas that got hit the worst. And there were people, actually, we came back the next Friday. We arrived back here in home, I think, on July 11th, and there were people still that hadn't had their power back yet. But, so that was the Monday when we found that out. And I think by Wednesday on the ship, we decided we should try and contact our son to see if we had any damage at home. And that was being done through Facebook on the internet on board. Trying to communicate with a 13-year-old boy, we're getting one-word answers. So we figured everything was all right if he wasn't too freaked out. So that. So that day we did the tour on the boat out to one of the wrecks, and you get a bit of a history tour when you're sailing out, which was neat. Telling about how Bermuda works, why it's such a financial or why it's become one of the financial capitals for places for people to kind of set up some of their offshore accounts, which was really interesting for us because one of the largest gas companies, I think, in Canada is based out of New Brunswick. And for a long time, they basically took all their money to Bermuda to avoid the taxes that they would have to pay on it here. So there's a connection from New Brunswick to Bermuda because of that. But, say we went to look at an old wreck, did some information about some of the resorts that were right around the dockyard. One that's a place where Elton John comes to every year and Oprah Winfrey, and then another one that was supposed to be some type of eco resort that the guy that built it was trying to charge people $600 a night to stay in, and they were basically staying in tin huts on poles out of the water.
Oh my.
And it was completely abandoned at the time we were there. So that's actually where we kind of pulled in to do our snorkeling bit. And the snorkeling was different because of the fact that you're not that far south.
Right.
You still see some fish, but it's not as colorful as you get in the Caribbean. And the coral is certainly not colorful at all. But it's still kind of neat to do the little snorkeling tour around. And the only other, the last full day we had, we took a ferry across the dockyard. That's the one good thing about Bermuda, is you can take ferries to get everywhere. So if you're at the docks, you can take ferries across to Hamilton. You can take the ferry down to St. George. You can take buses, cabs, the whole bit. So we bought a pass for the ferries, took the ferry across into Hamilton. My wife and I wandered around Hamilton a little bit and looked at some of the architecture and, there were Parliament buildings, which... their system is similar to ours. It would be in Canada because it's a British colony, same as we were.
Okay. That makes sense.
But the their Parliament building is smaller than our provincial legislature. So it's a little bit different to see some of the things like that. But the people that we ran into were very friendly. They're always asking how you're enjoying your trip. How you like Bermuda. You got a chance to walk through like a little shopping mall, which was very small compared to even what we would have here. But they found that the prices are quite high in Bermuda. So we didn't do a whole lot of shopping there, and there was a lot of the typical, some of the typical shopping you find for some of the Caribbean islands, where you've got a lot of jewelers along their main street. So that was all set up, and then we just simply jumped on a bus and took a trip to Horseshoe Bay Beach, which was one of their more popular beaches. When you take the bus, you're kind of at the top of a hill, then you have to walk down this long road to get into the beach area. And the other popular way of getting around Bermuda is scooters, which, again, based on research, people say do not rent the scooters because there's people killed on these scooters all the time.
Right, right.
And especially when you get into the more of the scooter rentals for tourists, they're not necessarily maintained that well.
Right.
And actually, we were got to the bottom of this hill. Some other tourists had come down, and we heard one younger man saying, "Oh, I had both the front and the back brakes on all the way down the hill, and I didn't think I was going to stop." So it's like, yeah, we're happy to take the bus. But, But the beaches were beautiful. Lots of big waves. I was very impressed that because of the size of the surf that day, there created a lot of rip tides at different times, and the lifeguards would always be out in the water going along where they expected the riptides to be, to warn people and say, listen, if this is what happens, if you get caught in one of these tides, this is what you do. So it wasn't like they just sat and waited for something to happen. They were very proactive in trying to make sure things didn't happen.
Yeah.
And the sand, it's one of the beaches that has the pink sand. So it's a very beautiful spot. And even though you're not right down in the Caribbean, the water has changed to that turquoise color a bit, not as much as you say right down in the Caribbean, but mm-hmm. So it's a really nice way to spend an afternoon.
That sounds really pretty.
Yeah, it is. It's very pretty, and so the rock formations that are around it, and the reason it's called Horseshoe Bay is because it's shaped like a horseshoe. So it's a pretty cool little spot.
Sure.
And the bus ride back from there back to the dockyard, it's an experience. It's a bus full of people, and it's very narrow roads, and nothing is straight. So there's lots of turns to go around. It was a fun ride back.
Bet those bus drivers get a real workout.
Yeah, I bet they do too. Yeah.
All right. So kind of looking back at this kind of, overall plan and how it all came out with this group of couples on their own doing this cruise out of Boston. First of all, what's your overall assessment? Was it a worthwhile plan? Would you do it again if you had the opportunity?
I think so. When we left the cruise, we said, Norwegian's wouldn't be our first choice of a cruise line. But that's not saying we wouldn't try them again. I don't think we would necessarily go back on the same ship. We'd probably try a different ship and maybe one of their bigger ships.
Right. The two brand new ships seem to be almost, completely different animals.
True, yes. Yeah. We'd love to find another cruise out of Boston simply because it's so easy for us to get to.
Sure.
For us to drive to Portland, Maine is, maybe 5 hours, and then getting on the train to right into Boston, and when you get off that train, you're not that far from the cruise port. So, if you were even going in the same day, it certainly wouldn't be that big a deal.
Right.
That's not saying that we wouldn't look for cruises again out of Florida, because we love going to Florida. But we'll say this certainly makes it easier. We just don't have as many choices going out of Boston.
Right.
We could look at going to New York or Baltimore as well, but that's just a little bit further. But we would definitely look at doing a cruise again out of Boston. I think there's a couple other cruise lines that do cruise out of there. We would probably look at them first. We would go back with Norwegian if the itinerary was right, but I don't think it would be the same cruise back to Bermuda.
Right.
It would certainly, mostly because of the experiences we had in the ship, not because of anything in Bermuda. I mean, going to Bermuda and staying there for 2 or 3 days again would certainly be fine, because you would get to see the rest of Bermuda.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, that makes sense. Another cruise, if Norwegian updates their fleet or somebody else is sailing a similar itinerary, it might be worth checking out. But, this particular package probably isn't the one you would go back to.
No, and I think what kind of, I guess, soured us the most was just the service that we received around the dining. It just didn't kind of meet what we expected it to be.
Right.
And I think we have some friends of ours, some older friends that have cruised with Norwegian before, and they actually have done a lot of cruising. And this was the one cruise that they said they would never, ever go back to, or a cruise line they would go back to, because of this freestyle dining. But they were, like, say, an older couple. They like the whole, I guess, the historical way of looking at cruises, where you're a little bit more pampered and stuff. But
right.
So I guess we were a little bit warned that it might not be the same as what we expected it to be, but when you combine the service that we received in the dining rooms with the lackluster food choices, it certainly put a sour on a lot of the other crews, the rest of the crews for us. And the fact that it was, I think, a smaller ship didn't help, because, in the evenings when you're trying to find a place where you could even just sit and have a chat with the people that you're with or other people that you're meeting, it was difficult to find that spot.
Right.
And with the karaoke,
aren't as many of them around.
No. And like I said earlier, with the karaoke that happened every night in the Pearly King's pub, and because the ship was out of Boston, I cannot tell you how many times we heard Sweet Caroline sung in the karaoke bar. Everybody from Boston loves Sweet Caroline.
Yes, yes. The Red Sox seventh inning stretch has ruined the song for everyone.
It was good the first 10 times we heard it, but after that it was getting a little old.
All right. So that's the overall assessment. You know, if you were going to give somebody else who's looking at this kind of a trip, maybe, you know, one or two pieces of advice, things to keep in mind about, you know, when they're putting this kind of thing together, what would that advice be?
I think one thing would be, if you're going on a cruise, if it's specifically where you're going to Bermuda and you've got 2 or 3 days where you're staying there at port, regardless of the cruise line, is to spend some time getting to know Bermuda before you get there. And the easiest ways to get around, because you don't need to book, or at least I don't think you need to book a lot of excursions to do the tour of Bermuda or anything like that. It's a very friendly, safe place to be, and it's easy for you to, like I say, jump on a ferry and go from the cruise ship to, say, St. George and spend the day going around St. George, looking around, hitting a beach. There's some neat places around St. George that we didn't get to that we would like to. There's some crystal caves up on that end of the island that we would have liked to have gone to, but you know, the change in the itinerary kind of messed us up a little bit. So there's easily you can find things to do without having to say, you know, book through one of the cruise line excursions, which tend, in my opinion, to be overpriced. The other thing I think is if you're going to do this type of itinerary, if you were doing it with one of the Norwegian ships out of Boston, which would be one of their smaller ships, is you have to, I guess, be prepared if you've cruised before that it's going to be a different cruise experience. It's not going to be the same. You probably want to look at maybe some of the pay restaurants. I'm not sure if the food was necessarily any better. I didn't really hear a lot of people saying things one way or the other. I know online when you talk some of the boards around cruising, some people will say that, you know, that's the only places they'll eat on any of these ships that have kind of these pay restaurants.
Yeah.
And stay away from the main dining room. But in our experience in the past, the main dining room has been perfectly fine. It just didn't end up being the case here. But I guess if you kind of prepare for that, maybe, or if you do spend some more time in some of these up-pay restaurants, it might be a little bit better.
And apparently now at Norwegian, make sure that you plan ahead in terms of dining reservations so that you're not one of those people that's caught at the end of the long line at the bottom of the stairwell.
Yeah, very, very true. Yeah, we knew you could make reservations for the pay restaurants, but we didn't know that you could make them for the main dining rooms until about 2 weeks before we left.
Right.
And luckily we did catch it, and we made, I think we made two before we left, and then we made a couple while we were on board, just to avoid that line.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, any other last thoughts that, you know, you wouldn't want to miss sharing with us?
I don't think so. Okay. The cruise, getting on and off a cruise in Boston is fairly straightforward. It was, you know, no different than any of the other. We've gone out of Fort Lauderdale, we've gone out of Canaveral, we've gone out of Tampa, and they're all fairly easily. The one thing, I guess, that we found, I think out of Boston and I think out of Tampa, as Canadians, we had to actually report to customs before anybody could get off the ship. So we had to clear customs on board, which made for some, you know, early mornings, because you'd have to be there 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning that your dock, getting into port. So, but I don't think they allowed anybody off the ship until, like, all the non-U.S. residents cleared customs. And to do that, you had to do it on board.
Right. Interesting. Good to know. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing about this trip, Darcy. You know, it's nice to get the flavor of some alternatives, because, you know, not every trip is going to be a Disney trip. So, you know, this was a perspective on a completely different option, maybe, you know, up the East Coast there.
And the other, I guess the other big piece of the cruises that, I get a little plug for home, that some of the lines do out of Boston is they come up this way actually in the fall. Right, so they would come up around from Boston into Halifax, Nova Scotia, and St. John, New Brunswick, and Bar Harbor, Maine on some of them, I believe. So, you know, it's certainly a nice... It's probably not a cruise that you're going to do with a young family, but if you're looking for something new, I know that they'll come up here through the summer into the fall, so it's certainly a place to get some, you know, a lot of fall color if you're coming up in the fall.
Sure.
The only caveat, I guess, coming through the Bay of Fundy between Halifax and St. John is you end up, it could be foggy on the best of days, so you might not see a whole lot while you're at sea.
All right. All right, well, thanks again, and I look forward to talking to you about the next one.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes. What delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.